never imagine that kids would be dancing and doing goofy things, right?
So, I'm old enough to remember that one time, many years ago, where you fooled everyone into believing you had won the lottery. And I mean everybody, family, friends, and of course, the Age of Empires community. I clearly remember Viper writing a comment in the Facebook post you made about it, saying something along the lines, "I'm so happy for you, Zach. Couldn't have happened to a better guy." Then, a few days later, you said it was all a hoax, and you had simply photoshopped the picture of you holding the winning ticket in your hand. However, I always wondered whether that was really true, if it was really just a hoax, or if you had simply regretted going public with it and were now in damage control mode. So was it really just a hoax?
Oh, man, I can't believe you brought that up. I'm really surprised that we're going that far back into history here already.
Oh, we are.
I know how prepared you are with these things, so I shouldn't be so surprised. But it wasn't me trying to cover it up. It was just a bit of a practical joke. When I was a kid, myself, my best friend, we would always be doing practical jokes. I'd go around to his house and we would like put up invisible strings. So when his mum came home from work, she would get tied up in it and just all things like this. And, you know, we made a huge slingshot and tried to get like a Finding Nemo toy to the end of his garden. And so it was kind of just in my nature to mess around a little bit, and I think that one personally went a bit too far. It wasn't good, but
people were mad at you, right? I remember that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that one.
Okay, Matt. Listen, your parents have divorced when you were still very young, right? And so during the week you lived with your mother, and then on the weekends you visited your father. And in order to make sure you would always be excited to visit him, your father had what can only be described as a 5D chess 300 IQ move. He bought you Age of Empires 2. Now, how did you engage with the game at first? Played against the AI campaigns?
Yeah, actually, we used to play on like a local LAN. He had another PC in his bedroom, and then I had one in my room when I was staying there.
As you played against
him. Play against each other on Black Forest, but we only had one CD. So we used to be able to put the CD into one PC, load up the game, get into a lobby, take out the PC, run it into the other room, put it into that one, and then we got it working that way. And then he one day magically had the internet, and that's when I first went online and actually played the game online. But it was also my first experience of ever going online. And that was like really, it blew my mind in a way. You know, I was only young, young Zach experiencing the internet for the first time. You can only imagine. But
so your first internet experience was connected to the game automatically. So it happened at the same time.
Yeah, like clicking the MSN Gaming Zone button on the menu. That was the first time I went on the internet ever.
Mind-blowing, right? I remember that clearly as well. So what year was that roughly? When did your father first get the internet?
It would have been like 2000, maybe 2001, I think. Yeah, roughly around then.
Okay, so you must have been like 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah, I think I was eight and a half-ish, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Amazing.
It's hard to even remember back that far. Like you have these really clear things and then everything else in between is kind of a blur. Like I always remember the dial-up sound. Like that will never leave me.
56K modems. Yeah, we talked about those before.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I think it was the only place where you could play online, right? So it was the Zone, and the Zone was Microsoft's officially supported platform for playing the game. And I believe you played Deathmatch at first, right? And Deathmatch was widely popular in those first days of the Zone.
Yeah.
When was the first time you tried random map?
So I did play some random map back then. I mean, obviously at 8 years old, I was terrible. I had no idea what I was doing. But my random map experience was with a friend that I made through the Zone. And he was actually from Australia. And we used to play like cooperative against the AI through the Zone, awesome. Which was kind of cool. And like that was the only time I really played random map back then. And you know, I just liked at that age, just having all the resources and being able to make war elephants and build up loads of castles and have these epic long games.
It's really interesting because back in those days, playing competitively wasn't really that popular, right? I mean, most of the people playing in the zone just wanted to play for fun against each other. Most people played unrated. And these days, it feels like it's the other way around. At least that's how I experience it, right?
Yeah, I think part of the game on getting the MSN gaming zone working was getting a lobby, like being able to host a game. I think there was only 100 slots, if I remember correctly, and trying to get a lobby slot was like half of the fun.
It was incredibly hard, yeah. I think it was, right, you had, I think, 200 people or 300 people was the max that could be accepted into one, not really lobby, but into one room, let's say. And then it was really hard to get a lobby because it was always full. It was so crowded. It was awesome, man. I loved those days. Anyway, I remember a few CBA videos in your channel. So were you a fan of CBA? I think CBA came much later, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always been interested in different game modes and just exploring what you can do within the game. I spent a lot of time when I didn't have the internet access, like building my own scenarios and things. And so, you know, they were a lot of fun. And I don't think I did too many custom scenario, like the Bloods. I didn't do too much coverage of those. But, you know, it's interesting and something a bit different from time to time. I do remember doing a lot of the roll the dice kind of videos. Like, they were really cool. And that when I saw that for the first time, I was blown away with just like, whoa, hang on a minute. Someone's done this in the editor. That's insane. That shouldn't be possible. And, you know, they used every trick in the book to make that thing just completely random.
How do those scenarios work again? It's just you get randomly assigned heroes, or how does it work exactly?
Yeah, I rolled the dice. It had like, you had like an outpost in the middle. Everyone had their own. And then you would get like a random unit and you had to go around killing other units, but everyone got 100% random units. And then, you know, like these games, they always have a shop. So you'd get gold for getting kills and you could upgrade them in the shop and all this stuff. And like, it had a lot of depth to it. Like, there was so much different, like, I guess there were so many different ways you could approach it, which I thought was cool, because a lot of these scenarios were just like smashing tons of units against each other, whereas this was more about focused on one unit and upgrading in a certain way. It's kind of interesting.
You know, so a lot of the references I'm using here come from an absolutely brilliant interview you gave to Pumuko a few years ago, which I'll be linking in the description box below, and I would encourage everyone to read. So in that interview, you describe a little episode which I think perfectly demonstrates how much the game meant to you back then. So even though you had no computer at your mom's place, you still would sometimes take the Age of Empires CD back home from your father's place. What for exactly?
Well, I had a PlayStation at my mom's, which I had saved up with all of my pocket money for about a year. And I would just pray that the game would run on the PlayStation.
That's so awesome.
And of course it didn't. But I put it in and I listened to the soundtrack while I did my homework and things, you know, just like, I can't play the game, but at least I can listen to the music.
That's so awesome, man. I can really see it in my mind. You putting the CD in, please work, please work.
Yeah, right.
Awesome, man, awesome. Look, you were obviously a pioneer in terms of bringing exposure to high-level games, and your YouTube channel is what brought back to the game a lot of people who had played it in their childhood. And, you know, so if today you hear a lot of people saying T90 brought me back to the game or Viper brought me back to the game, back then, it was always Zero Empires brought me back to the game. Happened to me, to D90, to thousands of others. And in fact, you probably don't even know this, but when people signed up to Voobly, they were asked how they found out about Voobly. And we obviously kept track of the answers. And Zero Empires was by far the most frequent one, by far.
Wow. I had no idea. That's really interesting. I had no idea.
Which makes that whole feud between you and Voobly, which we will get to later on, even more ironic. But anyway, so you started your YouTube channel in 2011. But before we get to that, I'd like to know what you were doing with your life in 2011. Were you in college already?
Yeah, I was in school. So, well, in the UK, college is what we call the 2 years prior to going to university. So I was in college in that respect, but most people would know that as high school probably. So yeah, I was still in school. I hadn't quite gone to university yet. And I was just focusing on that and, you know, doing normal teenager things.
Okay. But you did go to college at some point or to the university. What did you study there?
I went to study software engineering, but I never finished my degree.
Right. So you dropped out. And why did you drop out?
Yes. So something about me is that I'm either 110% into something or I'm 0% into something. And I sort of did a lot of reflecting after my first year of university. And I was thinking to myself, you know, is this really what I see for myself in the future? Like, is this really what I want to do? And I actually tried to change courses. I actually applied to switch into journalism, which is quite a jump from software engineering. And so the admins were looking at that and thinking, hang on a minute, that makes no sense. No, you're not doing that. And so I didn't want to carry on. I didn't want to pursue this. Like, I didn't have another option to pursue at university, sorry. And so I just decided that I was going to can it and I would find my own way. I was confident that if I applied myself, I would be able to find something and be good at something. But I didn't want to be in university anymore and studying anymore. And it wasn't really where I saw myself going. I didn't really want to go into software engineering as a career path at that point either.
Mm-hmm. So you said you worked as a night shift manager. What exactly does a night shift manager do?
Yeah, so in the times when I started to take YouTube and Twitch a lot more seriously. I was streaming a lot. I had some income from those sources, but it wasn't enough to live on. Mm-hmm. And so I needed to get some extra money. And so I took a job at nighttime in a supermarket, basically just stocking shelves. And it was like 12-hour shifts, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., really, really tiring, hard work, which was good for me, to be honest. I mean, it was the most exercise I did in years. And so, but I was pretty good at it. And they quickly promoted me to a manager position there. Mm-hmm. And I stayed doing that for a little while until I could sort of, you know, save up enough to be more independent again and leave that behind, because that was really a temporary thing. It wasn't something I wanted to do long term. And yeah, like working nights is for some people, but it certainly wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, YouTube, you started your channel in 2011. And I believe one of your biggest inspirations was Total Biscuit, who unfortunately has passed away a few years ago. And I had no clue who he was, but I listened to that one episode of the H3 podcast where he talked about what it was like to live with stage 4 cancer. And now, apart from obviously being an incredibly courageous man and really strong individual, what were the qualities you saw in him as a content creator?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, actually, because it sort of speaks to where the inspiration came from to get into it. And I mean, that was the time when I was watching a lot of up-and-coming creators back then. You know, like the first Yogscast videos were going up in Minecraft, and I was watching like TF2 star videos, and I would watch Total Biscuit casting StarCraft 2. And I think it just appealed to me because the way that he spoke about the game, I know in retrospect that he wasn't maybe the most knowledgeable person about StarCraft 2, but it really appealed to me because he made it entertaining and he made it approachable. And he had that really clear voice that I could just understand, and it felt really like easy to listen to. And seeing him casting StarCraft 2, which is a game which I never played, by the way, but I watched hundreds of hours of, really got me interested in the idea of esports and like viewing games as a sport would be presented, you know, in that light. And that was really exciting and interesting and inspirational as well, because I hadn't really seen it before.
You know, I think a lot of this comes down to these first pioneers, these first commentators of esports. They just had no problem showing that they love esports. They love playing computer games. And, you know, we're both the same generation, kind of. Well, we are both the same generation. And we were brought up thinking or hearing from everyone, yeah, computer games are bad. You're just wasting your time, right? And then you had these guys being really passionate about it and really showing how fun and how emotional it can be, right? Yeah. So I think that's what captivated most of us when it comes to these first commentators in esports.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, actually, just to speak to that, because I really found that when I was in school, you know, gaming wasn't cool. Gaming wasn't like the cool kids weren't playing games. You were a nerd or a geek or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like you say, finding people who are passionate about something you're interested in.
And not ashamed to share it, right? Not ashamed to show they're passionate.
Yeah, like that was really inspirational. And I think that played a huge part into it, because it helped me to feel like, you know, my interests are not just like some outcast thing. Like there's actually people who are really into this, and they're not just like my age, like they're older as well. And so it made me think that, hey, you know what, like maybe there's a future to gaming. And also I remember going to TwitchCon in 2018, and I was fortunate enough to sit in on a talk that Tony Hawk did, and it was incredible.
The pro skater?
Yeah, Tony Hawk, like the pro skater Tony Hawk. He had his first pro skater video game, right, on the like consoles.
I played it. Everybody did back then.
And he was saying about how skateboarding and gaming was very similar experiences for him, because back when he used to skate, skating wasn't cool. Skating was actually like a really nerdy thing to do.
Underground.
And like those people like really pushed it forward and showed the world like, actually, you know what, like, this is really cool. And like people's attitudes toward it changed. And to see that happen with gaming as well is awesome, because it happened there and it happened here, especially with games now like Fortnite, right? You'd never imagine that kids would be dancing and doing goofy things, right? It's like totally normalized playing games. I think that's amazing.
Right. So in 2013, the HD version of Age of Empires 2 releases on Steam. And back then, you were already a very prominent figure in the community. Everybody knew who you were. And so the fact you promoted and sort of endorsed the new version of the game was a big deal. How do you regard the whole Age of Empires 2 HD project today? Was it a failure? Was it a massive success? Something in between?
I think it's interesting. I think like just by the fact that Definitive Edition came out speaks to the success of HD in that it obviously brought enough interest back to the game, but it wasn't the final form, you know, of age.
It wasn't definitive.
It wasn't. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't HD enough. I think it was a success, because I think it put Age back on the radar for Microsoft. At the time when these HD remasters were coming out, it was a bit of like a fad. Like all of these game companies were doing it. They were all remastering their games and like, hey, you know what? Like they used to run on these old hardware. People are having a hard time getting them working on modern PCs. Let's just do something quickly, put it back out there, and we can get some money, right? Like most companies were doing that with their back catalog. But the fact that enough people took interest in HD, I think that was enough to catch some attention, you know, and show that actually, hang on a minute, maybe there's something here. Maybe we should actually explore this some more. And I think that's what happened. So in that respect, I think if we hadn't have had HD and we hadn't have had the uptick and interest in Age that came from it, like we might not even be here now. And as much as like I would like to say that I brought a lot of people back to the game, if HD hadn't have come out, I don't think we'd be anywhere close to where we are today.
Okay. It was also around this time that a rivalry started to emerge between you and Voobly, as we've previously mentioned. Now, to those of you who don't know what Voobly is, we've spoken about it a lot in our conversations with Dave and Cision, but basically Voobly is a third-party platform where all professional players were playing before the DE version came out. And so the rivalry started, Zach, because there was a big difference in philosophy between you and Vobly on how to best grow the community. So you were basically a content creator in the modern sense of the word. You produced content and you monetized it. As crazy as it might sound in today's environment, where lots of people make a good living producing content for this game, back then, some people actually criticized you for trying to do just that. And the reason was, they thought the game was not big enough to support people making money from it. And so Vobly's philosophy was that whatever little money can be made from the game, let's keep it all together in a pot. And once that pot becomes big enough, let's use that money to fund a future tournament, for example. And so this led to a war of words, a war of actions, a lot of nasty things were said. Was this rivalry bad for the community? Or do you think the competition between you and Vobly actually led to improvements and, you know, fostered innovation, which is something that healthy competition tends to do?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I know that I'm a very competitive person. And so having to compete definitely put a fire in my belly to do the best work that I could and push myself to innovate and try and, you know, one of the big things that I always focused on was like, well, how can we just bring this tournament or this experience of Age to the next level? Like, how can we look at what StarCraft's doing or what other esports are doing, and how can we get there, right? That was always what I was aiming to do. But yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up well. It was a difference in philosophy, and there's a lot of like debate at the time around like, you know, what is the best way to approach things. And being 18, 19 years old, like I've done a lot of maturing since then. I think if I rewound and gone back now, I probably would have handled things very differently on my behalf, you know, a lot more maturely, at least I like to think. But yeah, like, you know, I think everyone's intentions were in a good place. You know, a lot of passionate people getting together on an internet forum about a game that was released like 15 years ago, you're going to find a lot of passionate people with a lot of strong opinions. And yeah, sometimes those opinions went in different directions. And I think it's quite sad in a way that tensions got things got as dicey as they did. Like, things were said, and like it took quite a toll on my mental health actually at the time, because I knew where my heart was and what I wanted to achieve, and sort of being in like the small community with like critics and everything, it made it very difficult to like want to keep going and continue to do what I was doing, because it felt like it was, yeah, like there was a lot of pressure. And in the end, like, a lot of that could have been my own fault for the way that I approached things. But at the same time, I did feel like, you know, Vobly was this big organization. They had a lot of people, and I was just me trying to do my thing. And I didn't really have the platform and the like the volunteers and the number of people that Vobly had. So yeah, it was like, I didn't feel like I necessarily had anyone in my corner, so to speak, to like argue my case and like try and put across the way that I wanted to see things done. But you know, it wasn't just my decision on how things were done, and you know, we had to agree to disagree or compromise in some cases.
Mm-hmm. But all things considered, would you say it was this competition still had a net positive effect towards the community and towards the growth of the game?
Possibly. I mean, it depends how you look at drama, right? Like, some people are of the opinion that drama shouldn't exist. Everyone should get along, and we all love the game, so why can't we just, you know, exist in harmony? And other people are fueled by the drama, right? They log on every day to read like, oh, what's happening? You know, they want to read every comment about this, that, or the other, and get all the juicy gossip. So I don't know. Maybe it's a bit of both, and it's maybe neutral in the end. But I know from my perspective that I was very driven to continue to improve the quality of what I was doing, because I felt like I had to prove myself and to be able to stand almost alone in a sense, you know, in that I could do my own events and I didn't necessarily need to rely on Vobly to do events. that was kind of where I was coming from.
Mm-hmm. You know, so one of the peaks of this rivalry came in 2014 during the War is Coming tournament, which still to this day featured the highest prize pool in Age of Empires 2 history. Yeah, now, the tournament was organized by Vobly, sponsored by the Tyrant Clan, and as with every Vobly tournament, they didn't allow anyone else to broadcast the tournament, and so you were barred from live streaming it, which you were understandably upset about. Now, ironically, just 5 days after the tournament started, you uploaded a video to YouTube with the title, I Have No Words for This Game, just 5 days later, which with now almost 2 million views would become your most popular video and indeed one of the most popular Age of Empires 2 videos altogether. So was becoming a full-time content creator, especially after the success of that video, something you ever considered trying?
Yeah, I mean, I think I considered it, but it was tough because like back then, I don't think anyone was really a full-time content creator earning a living. Maybe like even now, if you look at sort of like the number of people who are successful on Twitch as content creators, it's like a fraction of a percentage. So back then, it was maybe a possibility. You know, I think the peak of what I was able to achieve in terms of Twitch and YouTube like viewership, I was like earning just about minimum wage in the UK. So I thought, you know, maybe I could get by doing this. But yeah, it wasn't really like the front of my mind of like, oh, I'm doing this because I want to be able to make a living from it. When I started, at least, it was like, you know, I want to share with the world that, hey, this game, which I love, you can still play it and there's people still playing it. And that was like the primary motivator.
That was enough to keep you going.
Yeah. Especially at that age when like, you know, I'm in uni, I'm at home, I've got, you know, I don't really have to have any dependents or responsibilities, you know, you can kind of get away with a bit more.
Right. So I don't really remember you as a very active streamer, at least not before 2013. I remember a lot of Viper streams, Dream streams, FH streams. FH was always a personal favorite of mine. Yeah, but I don't really remember you streaming a lot in those days. You were, for me personally, mostly a YouTube guy. So would it be fair to say that you prefer, you know, the more polished and finished product of a YouTube video as opposed to the more improvisational aspect of a live stream?
Yeah, I do like the polished YouTube content. Admittedly, a lot of what I put up were just like VODs from streams because, you know, like when you're streaming, you have the audience there, but you also have this audience on YouTube, which at the time were very separated because back then people would load up YouTube videos and let them buffer for an hour before watching them and they couldn't watch streams, right? So I would do a lot of that, but I really loved the fact that I could be creative with YouTube and put together these videos. There's not a huge number of them, but there are a number of videos I've done which had a lot more like scripting and effort and like editing put into them. And they're the ones that I feel most proud of because it's sort of a way to express yourself. You can have fun. You can do it in different ways. And you can, just be creative.
Any particular video stands out from those? I remember the Chuko new one, which was awesome.
Yeah, the one I remember the most, actually, I think my personal favorite is the Nothing Nothing video, where I parodied the Forest Nothing or the Nothing trend that T90 had at the time. And I was like, because he just kept going like more crazy. It was like, okay, Forest Nothing, great start, like, what next? And then the community's like, what's next? Okay, well, Wolf Nothing, Relic Nothing. Like, then I was like, you know what? How extreme can you take that concept? I was like, Nothing Nothing. And so I just got a bunch of players together, put them into this game, and the map was just empty. There was nothing. There was like no town center, no resources, no village. You couldn't do anything. And then all I did was record the chat and let them figure it out. And eventually, like, some of them resigned straight away, and others were like chatting or like, you know, like, what is there something deeper to this? And then, it just kind of was a bit of
the only thing you could do was fight, nothing else.
You could only type in the chat and resign, they were the only options.
You couldn't fight, so players okay, so you had no villagers, no nothing,
yeah, nothing, literally nothing.
Okay, nothing.
And yeah, like the video ended up going on for like 15, 20 minutes of these two guys just talking, and that was it. And then one of them eventually resigned and there was a winner.
And you were just commentating over it?
I recorded it and I went quiet and just let them talk. That's what I did. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But I did.
I haven't seen the video.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like that's one of my personal favorites. Like just because it was different, right? Like it was this, taking something so far, so extreme, and it ended up being quite just, yeah, a lot of fun. And these ideas are kind of, they don't come around so often.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So listen, in 2016, you released your farewell video to the Age of Empires 2 community. So you said you would stop producing content for the game. And in the same video, you announced the foundation of Escape Gaming, you know, a new esports organization, which you were to be the CEO of. Now, was Escape Gaming the only reason that made you quit Age of Empires? Or were you also a bit disappointed with the direction and with the development of the HD edition?
Yeah, so I mean, this was a tough time because I've obviously left university. I've moved into my own place with my partner at the time. And there was a lot more pressure coming in on like, you know, you need to find a job, you need to do something, you know, like this isn't going to be, it's so silly looking back, like to think like, oh, this doesn't have a future. But that's genuinely how it felt at the time, right? Like it felt like viewership was stagnating. It felt like the game was maybe stagnating. We had no support from Microsoft for tournaments back then. This mm-hmm. was sort of the early years of HD where I think HD came out in 2013. We'd seen this big influx of players, but there was no like follow-up. There was nothing else. That plus the, I guess, like the ongoing feuds with mm-hmm. Ripley at the time. Like, mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. I mentioned before, like I wasn't in a great place mentally. And so all these things came together. And then this opportunity came to try something new and actually get an experience of esports. Like, remember, like this was where I wanted to take Age mm-hmm. into the esports direction. And then this opportunity comes where, hey, you know, you could actually create an esports organization. And a little light goes off in the back of my head, like, oh, well, let's do that and let's see what we learn, see what we can do, and then maybe we can bring this back to Age of Empires one day. That was kind of where I was at. But in terms of creating content at the time, I genuinely didn't see myself returning to content creation. Just because I think of the... At that point, I didn't see it as a option to do like as a job, and also I didn't see it as something that would make me happy in the long term. Especially because I'm quite an introverted person and I'm like kind of socially anxious a little bit. So it was really a struggle to put myself out there on stream like a lot. So mm-hmm. it definitely helped actually. Yeah. You know, exposure therapy is supposed to be
right.
a thing.
But, right.
you know, yeah. So that's kind of what led me to that point.
Right. Just to clear things up for people listening, because you said there was no support from Microsoft in terms of sponsoring tournaments and so on. and that's true. Everything was taking place on Voobly, right? And, you know, if someone was getting good on the HD version, the natural way of things was to just move over to Voobly because Voobly was hosting competitive tournaments and they still had, you know, better spectating tools, more stability in terms of the performance and so on. Excuse me. Now, Escape Gaming had a CSGO team, a Dota 2 team, and I believe you also worked with a couple of Hearthstone players. And however, after 16 months and citing several problems, you released all those teams and concentrated your efforts in Age of Empires 2. So what exactly were those problems? And do you think, are those problems still prevalent today in the esports scene?
Yeah, esports is interesting, right? Like it was certainly a Wild West back then. It probably still is as much right now. You know, like you don't have regulatory bodies. You have a lot of young people who just want to play a game. And then you have these organizations that want to get them to sign a contract and honor it. And like, you're not going to take them to court if they don't honor their contract. Of course you're not, but you happen to have a contract. So, you know, yeah, so the think back then is that we actually had a lot of success with our teams.
Especially the Dota 2 team, right?
Yeah, the Dota 2 team that we had, they made it to the International, which for those that don't know, is like the biggest tournament for gaming like ever in terms of prize pool, at least. It's certainly up there in terms of viewership. I don't know if League of Legends might get slightly more, but it's huge. And the prize pool, like nowadays, it's like 40 plus $50 million.
It's wow, it's crazy. Gone up though. Wow, okay.
Yeah. Back then,
it's crowdfunded, right? Which is crazy.
They do it through in-game purchases. So it's like this thing that you buy in-game and then you level it up and you can... It's, I think, 25% of the money goes directly to the prize pool throughout the period of time that they're funding it for, which is mad because that means Valve's making like $150 million just from this in-game item. But, you know, so yeah, our Dota team, they went to TI6 and like that was an insane experience. Valve actually paid for everything. So that even my ticket, we all met up in Frankfurt before we went. We went to Berlin, actually, because I had worked with NVIDIA to get us like a boot camp training space. So we stayed there for a week and they practiced every day. And, you know, it was like a sports team, right? Like they're doing...
It wasn't the GL Gaming House, was it?
No. Are they in Berlin, actually?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I mean, Berlin obviously has going on when it comes to esports. But yeah, they played there like all week, nonstop, around the clock. They were like super hyper motivated. Mm-hmm. Then we took a train out down to Frankfurt. We flew from Frankfurt to Seattle. Valve obviously covered all of that part. And then they put us up in a hotel. And this hotel was insane. it was like the entire hotel had been reserved for the International. So you had all the teams staying there. And then you had all these rooms which were converted into gaming rooms. So it was like a hotel room with all the stuff removed and then a bunch of desks put in. And like,
wow.
You just had awesome. This like snacks, food. It was all laid on. It was incredible. And yeah, we competed there and they got through to the main event. So they actually got to play in the arena, but they were in the lower bracket. And unfortunately, they lost their first game to Fnatic. And it was a best of one. Like it was super brutal. Mm. And so we walked home, finishing last, well, joint last in the main stage. I can't remember what they won. It was like still like a couple of $100,000, which is mad.
Mm-hmm. Not bad. Mm-hmm.
They made it to the top of Dota. Like it's incredible. Yeah. That was a success and we felt really good about that. But one thing I remember, so as an esports org, one of the things that you're really always trying to do is like find sponsorships, find partnerships, right? Like that's how you're going to earn your money, through the exposure that you can bring to brands and those brand affiliations. And I remember trying to set up these meetings with these different companies. And the one that I remember the most, a certain energy drink that isn't Red Bull, sat down in a room and, we were like, hey, you know, let's talk about this. And before I could even say anything, they just said, we only sponsor winners. And then he left. I was like, why did you even sit down to talk to me, dude?
Why would they agree to meet you? Yeah.
And I was like, wow, okay. And this is before we'd lost as well. So like, he had no idea that we were going to lose, obviously. Crazy. And that kind of put like a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. Like, oh, okay, well, it's pretty rough out there. and it is like, that's just the way that like business works. Right. But after the TI though, we actually, our team got an offer from Ninjas in Pyjamas, which is another big esports org.
NIP, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we actually let them go there. We essentially sold the team to NIP. And at that point, we had to make the decision of whether or not we went on or not. Our CSGO team had some success as well. They won a number of tournaments. They went to a few LANs. But they were sort of like a tier two team. So they weren't really like in they're not like in the ESL or anything like that. And they tried to qualify, but weren't successful there. And so we had to make a decision, you know, like, do we want to go on? Like, how much longer can we go on for? Because we only had so much funding. And we realized that we needed 5 or 6 years to really, really get somewhere. And there wasn't enough commitment from the investors to commit to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Even with the success that we'd had and with the knowledge that we've gained and the contacts that we'd gained within the industry, it was just deemed a little too risky. And they were pretty open to doing risk, right? The fact that they started an esports org in the first place, but they couldn't commit for that length of time. And so we decided to let it go. But we, as a partnership, didn't want to just leave it at that. And so we thought, well, let's do something lower cost. We can use what we've learned and we can try and leverage some of our contacts to come back into Age of Empires 2 and start hosting Age of Empires 2 events with prize pools and partners and sponsorships and things like that.
Right. And so part of Escape Gaming's big push for Age of Empires 2 was the Escape Champions League. Now, this was a year-long tournament, which culminated in a LAN event in a studio in Manchester for the top three teams, I believe. And but despite the ambition and the scope of the whole project, the viewership numbers, particularly those of the final LAN, fell short of your expectations. And so in 2019, you announced the closing of Escape Gaming. Now, something I kept asking myself was, why didn't you ask for community support? I mean, everybody making a living out of Age of Empires 2 in those days had at least at some point made clear they need support from the community. There was Nilly with his first NAC. He said, hey, guys, if you want to see this again, I need your support. There was T90, who also said, guys, I'm going to try to go full time. I need your support. Why didn't you do that?
It's tough. I mean, in retrospect, we should have asked for community support more.
You would have gotten it 100%.
Well, yeah, I mean, we certainly had some community support, right? Like Carlini, I'm sure you've heard that name before.
Of course.
He was incredibly supportive of us. And, like, you know, he gave us a lot of hope that we might be able to find success in this. But ultimately, like, the vision with Escape was that we didn't need or want to rely on community support. So going all the way back to War is Coming, even, the one thing that I had always recognized is that the funding for Age of Empires tournaments was always coming from wealthy individuals or people who liked the game and had some money and they could support a tournament. Like the SY sponsor, like the Tyrant sponsor, right? And or even going further back, like the L Clan, Legion Clan sponsor, right?
Arbalet was his name, right?
Yeah, Arbalet, yeah.
Arbalet, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like there's always these people who come around and like they come, they're able to support these tournaments, but ultimately they're not there forever, right? They can't just keep putting money into the game. And given that there was this need for tournaments in Age of Empires, right? Like we needed funding for tournaments to come from somewhere. And we did do some community fundraising. I know I did for like some tournaments that I ran, but I wanted to do it through commercial sponsorships. That was kind of like the end goal. Mm-hmm. And that way the community didn't need to constantly be asked for money to bring the next tournament. And, you know, we're kind of there now. And that's what I'm really pleased to see. The way that H2 has continued to develop is that we have Microsoft and we have Red Bull now. We have, you know, some other companies who are actually
Amazing
putting
story.
Up money. And it's incredible. We don't need the community support. And I think that was where I always wanted the game to get to. And that's what I was wanting to push it towards. Actually, funny story. One of the early tournaments I did was called the Empire Collective Cup. And I managed to
get
two sponsors for that. One of them was a search engine optimization company, I think called Search Engine Revs. And the other one actually was an independent guy who wanted to stay anonymous, but he wanted to promote Bitcoin.
Well,
And he gave me 4 Bitcoin to fund this tournament. And I think at the time it was worth like $600. For all 4.
Okay.
Of course, being broke, I sold the Bitcoin to fund the tournament. Like how silly of me in retrospect. But, you know, like there was always a push or I was always trying to push to find sponsors and commercial entities that would invest in the game just so that we didn't have to rely on individuals and be lucky enough that we had these people who are passionate enough about the game and had deep enough pockets to be able to support tournaments.
Would things have turned out differently if you had somehow managed to keep things afloat until DE's release, which was just a few months away?
Like with Escape, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. It was tough. I mean, we certainly were really ambitious with that project. I think, you know, in hindsight, we were way too like big, large scale with the project. We knew we wanted to do LAN events. We knew we wanted to get people into a physical location. And so that prompted us to go with like this warehouse type situation, which was, don't get me wrong, like the whole experience of doing Escape was one of the best things and most memorable things I've ever done in my life. Like we flew Robo in from Australia and we lived together. We had Interjection in Age of Empires 3 caster. And,
remember.
You know, we had Hamuel, who I don't think he's as well known, but he was at a few Age meetups and we got to know each other. And we all lived together in a house and like went to work every day and built this studio. And that's an amazing experience. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, had DE come out, maybe we could have continued on. But we needed to get like consistent funding in order to be able to be successful long term. And so I think the project was fairly likely to fail from the outset, but we couldn't say no to the opportunity to do something that cool. you know, like when are you ever going to get the chance to do something like that? Now, if I could go back and do it again, I probably would just say, you know what, let's just, you know, the four of us were living together anyway, let's just rent somewhere that had an extra room or like a big space as part of it. And then let's turn that into the stream space. And then let's rent out a venue whenever we need one to do bigger scale events. But, you know, the fact that we built this studio from nothing in a warehouse and managed to do two LANs there, and I think create some really amazing memories for ourselves and for everyone who came, like the players and the viewers, you know, I wouldn't change that.
You know, a lot of things have not turned out the way you wanted or the way you had hoped for during your Age of Empires career. So there's you not being able to cast The War Is Coming. There's Escape Gaming having to sell their esports teams. ECL not bringing the attention you wanted and having to close the studio. And yet you always keep trying. You always keep coming back with new projects. And you know, as someone who struggles with this stuff, with stuff like this myself, where does that resilience come from?
I don't know. I think at least when it's come to Age, I was so determined to do something at some like with the game. I've always wanted to just be involved, and I guess just a desire to be involved with the game and with. Yeah, I honestly don't know. It's really hard to pin that down. But like,
could it have something to do with the fact your parents divorced when you were very young, and that you had to learn, you know, to deal with adverse circumstances from a very early age?
I don't know. I don't think that actually took its toll on me very much. I was sort of with my mum like 99% of the time. And you know, actually it's interesting. I was a single child as well, so I don't have any siblings. And my two best friends were both single kids, so they were like my brothers, just because we didn't have other like family, I guess. But I don't know if that necessarily relates. I think that's an interesting theory, though. Not enough of a psychologist to be able to answer that one.
Right. So anyway, you didn't have much time to feel disappointed about ECL, because shortly after, you were contacted to join the Age of Empires 4 project. So when did it contact you for the first time, and what exactly is your role in the project?
Yeah, actually, I can't remember if I contacted them or they contacted me. I mean, I was in contact. I actually had a job offer from Microsoft a few years before that to work as a community manager. And I turned it down because at the time I just wanted to focus on doing my own thing. I wasn't ready to work for another company yet. And so this sort of came at the right time, in a sense, that we just ended Escape. And I started on the age 4 team at Relic as a community manager. But, you know, the game only just came out now, and that was nearly 2 years ago that I took the position. So there wasn't a lot of community to manage at that point. But I was quickly recruited from the community team into the balance team. And then I taught, well, learned how to use the tools at Relic. They have a proprietary engine, the Essence engine. And I took it upon myself to learn how to make the game, as well as just offer balance suggestions. And so I was doing that until it sort of, so I was just in the community team. I moved over to the balance team, and then I sort of took on a bit more of like a gameplay role as well. So I was involved in creating the game as well as offering the balance suggestions.
Right. What does a typical day of work look like to you these days?
Oh man, it's busy. We have a lot of meetings. I hate meetings. I'm so productive when I don't have meetings. It's great. But no, I usually will go in the morning. We have a playtest in the morning. It's really critical to us that we play the game. You know, it can be so easy to not play the game that you're making. It's crazy, but you can get so caught up in like all the work that needs to be done that you don't take the time to play. And we play actually with the Forgotten Empires team as well. Involved. They have a balance team. And so we play with them every morning, and we discuss the hot topics. Nowadays, obviously, the game is out. So things that we're seeing from the community, things that we are experiencing. Then sort of as the day goes through, we'll have a sync ups with different teams. And then for me, I'm often fixing bugs. That's basically a lot of what I do, but also working with other teams on new features. They recently announced that they'll be adding a global queue. So I'm working with that team to make sure that we're designing the global queue in a way that feels intuitive to age players and to make sure that it also fits within the age 4 requirements, right? Because it's a different game. The approaching it with in the same way as age 2 wouldn't necessarily work. And yeah, then just continuing on with the day and fixing more bugs probably and making some more changes with the balance team. You know, we'll discuss for hours sometimes deciding about, because, you know, balance is interesting because there's like things that could be objectively balanced, and then there's like where you're trying to take the game, where you really want the game to go from the game design perspective. And the balance team works with a lot of other teams. Like, we don't just do what we want to do, right? The Civ team will design a civilization, and we want to make sure that, well, as we're balancing a civilization, we're still keeping that true to the vision of that Civ and what that identity. Civ is trying to do. Yeah, exactly. And one of the big things is the asymmetry in age 4. We're always trying to find ways in which we can make sure that we preserve the asymmetry of the civs, and if anything, increase the asymmetry without destabilizing the balance of the civs too much. And that's a really difficult thing to do. And
well, yeah.
Now the game is released, we have a lot more data, so hopefully that will make our lives a bit easier as well.
I mean, StarCraft 2 tries to do it with 3 civs. You guys have got 8.
Yeah.
So it's
not quite the same level of asymmetry, right? Because we have the same core units. So like in StarCraft, everything is completely different. But the Civs share like the same roster of core buildings, the same roster of core units. So that creates like a solid baseline that you can work from. And then you can kind of like play on top of that and continue to iterate from there. So there's definitely a lot of challenges, but you know, it's not really like StarCraft 2 where the whole Civ is completely different.
Right. Now, you know, upon Age of Empires 4 release, many people feared the new game would, you know, have a negative impact on AoE 2's competitive scene. And at this point, at least right now, I think it's pretty fair to say that it has had a negative impact. You have tournament organizers, you know, who used to organize AoE 2 tournaments and now only organize Age of Empires 4 tournaments. You have pro players who now barely play Age of Empires 2, which means, you know, viewership and exposure on Twitch have gone down massively. And just to be clear, I'm absolutely not criticizing anyone for their choices here. Just trying to be objective and stating some facts. But it's someone like you, you know, who has been following this community for over a decade now, where do you see things going for both games? You know, is one game going to swallow the other? Could they both benefit from one another? How do you see things developing from here?
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you make a prediction, you're almost guaranteed
it'll be wrong.
It's going to be wrong. It's like the caster's curse, right? But I hope that H2 and H4 can coexist. I certainly, you know, I think with H4 being so new, being fresh, everyone's kind of like jumping on it, because if you're a content creator, at least, it's good for you to do the new thing. It's also, you don't also know where it's going to go. So if it is the next big thing, you want to be in that, because mm-hmm. you want to be part of that.
Don't get behind.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. You don't want to get left behind. But in terms of like the longevity of either game, like I say, I think they can coexist. They certainly appeal to different groups, I think. And you're always going to have this hardcore H2 fan base, which is just going to be diehard for H2. And I think we've seen some new tournament announcements coming for the new year, right? So there's certainly still support for them, for H2 and H4. So we'll just have to wait and see. I'm certainly really amazed that players like Viper have been able to just snap his fingers, like, oh, I'm playing H4 now.
Are you really surprised? I'm not surprised at all. I mean, that guy is just one of the most talented players I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
he just understands things so fast. It's unbelievable.
I suppose Viper's pretty good. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I guess part of me is surprised because, you know, Viper's played H2 for so long. And there's certainly skills that you can transfer from one game to another. I think, yeah, like because he had his hand injury and I guess some of the troubles he's faced with that, I kind of maybe underestimated him a little bit, mm-hmm. to be honest. But he's a brilliant mind and he's incredibly talented. So maybe I shouldn't, pardon me, maybe I shouldn't be surprised. I should also have a drink because I've got a dry throat.
Yeah, you do that. You do that. So, you know, another reason for viewership for Age of Empires 2 on Twitch has gone down is the fact T90 and Viper are now streaming on Facebook. And by the way, my sources tell me those two might be joined by someone else in the near future.
Oh, really?
No certainties there, though.
I heard that someone else was joining them too, but now I believe they're not, so I don't know.
Okay, so I'm not sure we're talking about the same people here.
Maybe not.
Let's just leave it at that. Okay, now, we know these guys have been offered incredibly lucrative contracts to switch platforms. So do you ever think that in a different universe, you know, under very slightly different circumstances, this could have been you?
I knew you would ask this question. I knew it.
I had to.
You know, it's hard not to, right? Like, think about, oh, what could have been. But nothing is for certain, right? Like, as I mentioned before, I wasn't particularly happy at the time, you know, when I left streaming and left content creation. It was taking its toll and I wasn't sure I could do this like long term. So had I continued, would I have been happy? That's not an answer that I can give you. And also, had I continued, it's not to say that the success of others would have been impacted by that, right? Like, I think
you would have had a head start, though. You would have had a head start for sure.
Oh, yeah, certainly would have had a head start, but there's no reason why T90 wouldn't have been as successful as he is now, because, you know, he's incredible at what he does. He's a very talented person, and he also had the drive to keep pushing and innovate too, right? Like things like Hidden Cup and the amount of innovation he made in terms of like the way he presented the game, the people he got on board and the teams that he built around him to support him, like, that's really awesome. So, you know, I don't know whether or not anything would have been different, really, like, if I had streamed. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to not think that, hey, you know, if had it carried on, maybe I could have gotten a big deal to go to Facebook. But, right, you know, would I have been happy doing it? I don't know.
Right, right. Fair point. What are the chances you could start uploading to your YouTube channel again?
Oh, probably zero right now.
Really?
Although I've said that before, haven't I? You never know. You never know. Maybe I'll start uploading videos about something entirely different and, and everyone will unsubscribe. No, I don't know. It's hard. I mean, it's hard now to find time. Like, I have actually thought about, like, hey, what if I streamed a little bit from time to time? But It's really difficult to find the time when you're working. And I work more than I should on H4 because I'm really passionate about the franchise as a whole. And so I put in the extra time. And at the end of the day, especially with the time zone here, being in Canada now, it's not ideal for streaming.
It's so harder, right?
Yeah. And so, I, you know, all things considered, it's just kind of not leading me to do it. And I would love to be able to sort of stream very casually. Like, you know, I'm not doing this for any particular reason other than because I want to. And maybe that will come back one day. But at the moment, it's not quite there.
All right. Fair enough. Zach, this has been great, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Great to see you again, man.
Pleasure. Thank you.